Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Well, ladies and gentlemen, in the second hour of today's show, I have a very important guest coming aboard. She's been on the show before, Mimi Alaham, and I probably pronounced that wrong, and I'm sure I will be corrected on that if I have. Mimi is better known as Syrian Girl, and she can be found on YouTube, and she's very well known to a lot of people around the world. She's been doing incredible work exposing the barrage, the endless barrage of deceit, of propaganda, of just completely ridiculous manipulation of public opinion about the Syrian crisis. And Mimi really single-handedly has done so much work that it just is a crying shame when we don't see the media doing its job. But at the same time, it really does give an opportunity for people who are passionate and care about their country, as Mimi does, to step forward and show their talent and show their commitment and their originality and their ability to do proper investigative work. Mimi, welcome back to Truth News Radio.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Thank you so much. Now, did I pronounce your name correctly?
Oh, it's close. It's yeah. Laham, actually.
Okay, Laham. Mimi.
It's a very difficult sound for the English speakers to make. Laham.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of breath there in the name, in the language. Yeah, that we don't have. Mimi, there's quite a few topics I'd like to run over during the show. Now, we last had you on the show quite a while ago. It was more than a year ago. It was actually 2012, and a lot has happened in that time. And I think probably the first thing I would like to get your take on is when the Russian-brokered deal with the UN was announced in the news last year, whereby the Syrian government would hand over its chemical stockpiles, you put forward a very, very passionate and very disturbing video in which you declared that this was more or less suicide for the Syrian nation, that in doing this they had more or less guaranteed that their country would be taken over and that ultimately they would lose their sovereignty because of this encroaching control from the geopolitical forces of the West. Do you still stand by that position, or have you changed it at all?
I think for the most part, I still stand by that position, because it's just been a constant trend that nations in the Middle East have been disarmed. And then, you know, maybe not even 10 years down the line in Syria's case, but in the previous cases, you know, 10 years down the line, we see that there's been that there are either occupations or in Libya's case there was the no-fly zone. So the thing is, though, that Syria doesn't have other cards it can play.
Yeah.
But the clear sign was that Syria's neighbors and that threaten it, such as Israel, and the outside forces that threaten Syria, which are NATO powers, which want world hegemony, saw that the chemical weapons were the biggest threat. And this is something that's prior to the chemical weapons attacking. This was something in 2004 already. The U.S. was making overtures to the president of Syria to hand over chemical weapons, and the Syrian government refused and wrote them a letter saying, well, we're willing to disarm so long as the rest of the Middle East disarm too, including Israel can disarm its nukes. And they submitted this proposal to the United Nations. And, of course, the U.S. vetoed it. So this chemical weapons saga, even though it's been in the public eye for the last 2 years, has been going on for a decade now. So I think, as far as my position goes, the point of supporting the side that I support by standing by the army and the state against what is clearly a foreign threat is that, on that account, I think for the government's part of the bargain is that they have to protect our interests. They have to protect our sovereignty. And they can't give that or surrender that up for their, you know, for maintaining power. Because that delegitimizes what we're trying to do here, which is to protect Syria and keep Syria strong.
Absolutely.
So my point is, sorry, I'll let you go ahead.
I just wanted to emphasize that you see the possession of these weapons, even though they're regarded as abhorrent weapons, you see them as a deterrent, and that that having such deterrents are necessary for nations like Syria, which are under such threat. Is that correct?
Absolutely. The thing is, for sure, wars have been avoided because of deterrents. As abhorrent as these weapons might be, someone with an abhorrent weapon as well, which like a nuclear bomb, which can have far more devastating and long-term effects, more so than chemical weapons, will think twice before using it. And, you know, these nations that do have nuclear weapons, such as the United States, have used their weapons on civilians before, such as in Japan. And that was the only time they were used. So I think that these smaller countries that don't have nuclear weapons, that only have these crude chemical weapons as their only form of a deterrent, you know, why are we disarming them before we disarm the countries that have massive stockpiles and have had a history of using these weapons against other nations?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say I can really see your point. And, of course, a lot of people will simply have a knee-jerk reaction to the concept of chemical weapons. But I think in many ways that is a bit of a manipulation of the way people think, which has been done by the media. Because, of course, all weapons are forms of mass killing that are abhorrent. So a landmine or sarin gas, what's worse? I mean, I don't know. Having your legs blown off by a landmine or inhaling sarin gas, gee, I really wouldn't be able to say which one is more abhorrent. But the point is that there is an argument that is used, and a form of rhetoric that was used, and we, of course, we saw it used by the American administration. John Kerry particularly comes to mind, coming forward sort of ashen-faced and, before the American people, saying that this terrible thing had happened in Syria, that it was just beyond anything imaginable that chemical weapons had been used. And of course, a lot of that has turned out to be misreported and misrepresented, and I want to get into a lot of that during this show. But I think the whole argument about chemical weapons versus other weapons versus nuclear weapons is such a manipulated and co-opted and ridiculous set of talking points that we need to sort of free ourselves of our mental chains when we even come to think about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same talking points that we've heard about Iraq. I mean, it's like a formula, and if it's not broken, they don't have to change it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And of course, we see Israel, which has been known to have nuclear weapons for decades, never gets questioned about it, and it never turns into a massive public concern issue that Israel has nuclear weapons. Everyone in the world seems to accept it. And so, again, it's just the double standards are just incredible, aren't they?
It is indeed. And, you know, the ironic thing is Israel is the only country that's actually threatened to use them on the world when it declared its Samson option. That in the end, you know, Israel is ready to nuke everybody if it's going to go down.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So with that in mind, let's just now have a look at what you know, Mimi, about the chemical attacks that occurred last year. And, of course, this was a huge international story that was dominating the news all over the world for several months, really, after the chemical attacks in Aleppo. A lot of different versions of that have floated up. Some have said that they thought that the attacks were completely staged, and that the children depicted in the photographs were not even really corpses. Other people have said that in fact the attacks probably were real, and I think you're probably in that camp, but that they were actually launched by the Syrian rebels, and there's quite a lot of evidence to substantiate that claim.
Well, I think, you know, before I start commenting on the evidence for the various scenarios, there is that I wasn't on the ground, so I can never for 100% tell you what happened. But I know for a fact, for certain, that when Obama made his chemical weapons speech, he kind of opened the door to the inevitability of chemical weapons being used. Even though what he was saying was, if you are to use chemical weapons, we're going to attack you, in the sense that he's trying to prevent a chemical weapons attack. But in saying that, he's basically put on the table for anybody that wants to see an intervention in Syria, for any person that wants to do so, to push for it, to make it happen, whether by being it themselves, whether by getting the rebels to do it, or whether by having an infiltrator in the Syrian government do it. It basically opened the door to every scenario for anyone who has an agenda to see an intervention in Syria by the U.S. The U.S. said, well, you know, we'll do it if there's a chemical weapons attack. Not if millions are killed, not if like a certain number of children are killed, just if there's a chemical weapons attack. So it's kind of like, this is the price. Because at the end of the day, the agenda is clear. The U.S. wanted the chemical weapons. They didn't want any other thing. They didn't say if Kalashnikovs were used. You know, it's the chemical weapons that was the agenda. And the deal just kind of highlighted that. So, in the first place, besides any scenario, it was the U.S. administration, Obama, that brought up chemical weapons to start with, and then finally put up the scenario of a possible U.S. attack if it were to take place. So, as well as, you know, funding the insurgency itself.
Yeah.
And creating the chaos. You know, they basically put in the pieces of the chemical reaction in order for this to take place.
Yeah.
So now to comment on the evidence of every single scenario. You know, I have heard, I have seen the reports that some of the kids that were killed in Ghouta were from Latakia, and I've heard reports that you know, the whole thing was staged. But the question I have is, if it were staged, why wouldn't they just kill the kids anyway? I mean, it's not no skin off their back if they're really, really serious about having this intervention to kill these children anyway. And I think, you know, it's very difficult to make a baby act, and I've seen video footage of babies gasping
indeed
for air.
We're just going to break, Mimi. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm talking to Mimi, Syrian girl. We're talking about some very important issues. Don't go away.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. My guest today is Mimi Alaham, who joins us to talk about the situation in Syria and the various forms of disinformation that she has been exposing for several years now on the internet. Now, Mimi, can you continue where you left off there as you were describing your take on the various scenarios in regard to what really happened in those chemical weapons attacks in Syria in 2013?
Absolutely. Well, in the first place, I would like to mention that many bloggers, including myself, in 2012, were saying that the U.S. was ready to conduct a false flag attack of chemical weapons in order to intervene in some way and take the chemical weapons. And I, among others, said this a year prior to the occurrence, and as well as my appearance on the Alex Jones show right after the chemical weapons attack and before any speaking of any Russian deal, I said quite blatantly that this is not going to end up in intervention. There's not going to be a no-fly zone. If no-fly zone has always been impossible, which is something I've been saying since the beginning, because Syria has a powerful air defense system, and that this is going to end up with the U.S. attempting to take away the chemical weapons. Now, in my mind, I thought that the Syrians are going to refuse and that this was going to end up in a regional war, which was a very possible scenario. Unfortunately for Syria's case, the Syrians didn't attempt to see whether the U.S. was 100% serious about being ready for a regional war. So it's basically a game of chicken between these nations. But back to the scenarios, you know, on the one hand, you have many bloggers and analysts saying that there's going to be a false flag attack. There's a clear agenda for the U.S. to have a chemical attack in Syria. In 2012, the insurgency in Damascus was far, far closer to actually taking over Damascus. They had more control over the airport road. So the fact is that the Syrian military was in more dire circumstances and didn't use chemical weapons than later when they supposedly did, which defies logic. Furthermore, the UN was in Syria on the same day that the chemical weapons attack happened. They had arrived in Syria that day or the day prior, and they were there to investigate a chemical weapons attack in Khan al-Asal. And it seems that that chemical weapons attack was clearly done by the rebels, because it was very makeshift. It wasn't weapons grade by any means. It killed Syrian soldiers. And it was an area that the rebels were trying to take over. So this was in Aleppo, I believe, in May that it happened. And the Russians sent a team in, and their conclusion was, of course, that it was the rebels. But then again, you know, the Russian side on this was very clear. But Syrian soldiers were killed in that attack. And if you read the leaked conversations between one American contractor that was in Aleppo at the time, who was fighting alongside the rebels, his name is Matthew Van Dyke, he says quite explicitly, even to the brown man, who apparently is, you know, the go-to guy for chemical weapons research that the MSM always quotes because he supports their agenda, he told him quite explicitly that he had heard the rebels had got their hands on chemical weapons through some small stockpile they found, and that they were going to use it on Aleppo. And that was what the UN was there to investigate, and they were completely redirected to this Damascus attack. So it's interesting that it, you know, conveniently happened on the same day that they were there as well. So this is all, you know, every single part of this is evidence leading to a conclusion. The MIT report as well, sorry Sorry, go ahead.
Absolutely. Really interesting material. I actually would like to go into the subject of Matthew Van Dyke in depth, but I'll let you continue there because you're going to make another important point. But after that, I'd like to actually talk about Matthew Van Dyke because he's a very interesting character. But please continue.
Absolutely, no problem. Well, when the U.S. government was beating the drums of war, they came out with this intelligence report that said that the missiles had come from the government side into these areas inside the rebel-held territory. And now, a report from MIT, from two experts in MIT, which is Massachusetts Institute of Technology, which is a very, very prestigious university, and it's not a source that's credible because it's the United States, it's not in another country that has an agenda.
Indeed.
So it was impossible for the type of missiles that were found to have supposedly contained the chemical weapons to have come from the government side because they only have a range of 2 kilometers at most. So that, you know, sort of shoots down everything the U.S. was saying. Another interesting fact is that at the time, one of the first countries that came out and said that they had intelligence that the Syrian military had fired chemical weapons was the Israelis, who had said that they intercepted phone calls of the Syrian government, frantic phone calls of the Syrian government asking the military what had happened. So that kind of doesn't suggest any sort of order from the top as well.
Yeah.
But it's funny because the Israelis threw this around as evidence that it was indeed the Syrian government that did it, and that was their official stance. And of course, Israel does have an agenda to see Syria's chemical weapons disappear. You know, that's the only reason that Israel can't occupy South Lebanon. They have a fear of Syria as well, or at least they used to.
Indeed, yeah, I agree. Look, none of it adds up. It's just there's just so many things that do not square with the facts. And you've raised some information there that I wasn't aware of about this study that was done at MIT. So, I mean, that unfortunately, this information will never go out to a mass audience. It will only be available to people who come on alternative media, on your YouTube or this show. But the facts are there. Anyone who wants to find them can confirm that, and I'll put some show notes on this show to substantiate what you've said. Mimi, I'd like to talk a little about Matthew Van Dyke, because you referred to him there before because of his leaked emails. Now, the whole question about Matthew Van Dyke, I think, is actually very important because it illustrates the level of subterfuge and infiltration that's going on that took place in both Libya and Syria. Now, just for our audience, Matthew Van Dyke is known on CNN as a documentary filmmaker and a freelance journalist. That's how he's been described on CNN. He's actually written for The Guardian as well, and a number of other publications around the world have reported on his reports. But at the same time as all of that, it's been quite clear that Matthew Van Dyke is actually a mercenary soldier. And the word mercenary is completely appropriate in this case because he injected himself into the Libyan conflict. And leaked emails have been revealed by you, Mimi, which demonstrate that his involvement in the Libyan conflict was not simply out of his personal interest, but that it was actually connected with U.S. Private security firms who were getting involved in the Libyan conflict, and that he was actually bringing them in to join in, and he was actually inviting more people to come in and participate. I'll get your take on that when we come back from the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Don't go away.
We'll be right back.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And I'm talking to Mimi, a Syrian girl, who is well known on YouTube for her expose of disinformation in the mass media in relation to the Syrian conflict. And we are just now getting into the subject of this very curious character by the name of Matthew Van Dyke, whose leaked emails have demonstrated, among other things, that the use of mercenaries in Libya was being orchestrated through U.S. Military channels, including private security firms, and that his presence over there, which he had said was due to the fact that he wanted to support the Libyan rebels, which is a pretty bizarre thing in itself. I mean, Americans don't just go over to the other side of the world and spontaneously become partisans for a rebel organization unless they're motivated by some really, really deep convictions. And this guy certainly doesn't seem to be. So he didn't seem like a jihadist to me. Anyway, his news reports started coming through on CNN when he went to Syria after having been in Libya, and he kind of morphed from being a mercenary soldier to a documentary filmmaker. All quite bizarre. But one of the emails which was leaked and which Mimi did provide in one of her YouTube videos states the following. And this is to one of his associates. It states the following. Jack, I hope you are well. I'm getting in the military contracting business in Libya and throughout the region, and I am looking for ex-US military partners to get things launched. I have an innovative strategy and connections in the region that will give the company a significant competitive advantage. Do you know anyone who might be interested in discussing this further? So, Mimi, I'll get you to expand on that.
Well, the leaked emails were provided for by the Syrian Electronic Army, which are a group of Syrian hacktivists within Syria, and they're quite well known. They're more well known than I am, certainly. And the email that you just read is actually one of many other examples where he spoke about working alongside military contractors, otherwise known as mercenaries, and basically agreeing that Libya is, in his words or in his friend's words, Libya is for making money, but Syria isn't. In his own words, throughout these gigabytes of emails and Facebook messages, you know, from 2 years, he says that the reason he didn't fight in Syria as he did in Libya is because it was very dangerous for him to fight in Libya without a no-fly zone. And so it would be taking too much of a risk. But I think, you know, in the case of Matthew Van Dyke, it's the case of the nail that is the most raised is the one that is banged down the hardest. Because he's obviously not unique in the sense that he's got very clear and obvious connections with intelligence organizations. Not to say that he is an intelligence officer himself, but he's got clear connections, and he admits this because, you know, he studied at a university that is basically a production ground for intelligence agents, and his dream in life, as he said publicly, was to join the CIA. Now, I think that there's many other clear examples, as you said, of the foreign hand playing in these Arab Springs, and that he isn't necessarily the greatest example of such a thing. He's just the most obvious one.
No, indeed. A lot of his emails which have come forward indicate a degree of sort of a cynical awareness of how fake the whole business is that he's involved in, and he was probably foolish to expose himself in that way. He's probably not a professional, because his his Twitter, or was it his emails, his various statements certainly indicated that he was not really very serious about what he's doing, that he's kind of doing it for gain. And another thing, Mimi, which you've drawn attention to, is the fact that that he was involved in creating propaganda videos in Syria, which involved having children cry, and he used lemon juice to make them cry, and various little tricks like that to basically fabricate these videos.
Well, absolutely. You know, just on what I was saying, I wanted to mention the name of Ubay Shahbandar, which is a clear agent who works for the Syrian Support Group, which Matthew Van Dyke was also involved with, which is an NGO that provides money directly to the Syrian insurgents. Now, as what you said, he basically says outright that he wants to create a propaganda film. And in one of his messages to his girlfriends, he says, Noor Kels, which is one of the girls he interviewed in his film, is saving my film. She played sad music to a girl and then used an onion to make her cry, for people to get emotional and to give money to the SSG so that they could give it to the FSA, so they could buy guns with it on the black market. And he says that quite explicitly in his emails. Also, you know, there's other examples in his emails show him talking to this character, Noor Kels, about telling what the children in his film to say. But what I find really interesting is, even after all of this is exposed, even after he admits that the contents of the messages are real and that he stands by everything he said, the mainstream media is still using his film, is still like a journeyman pictures upload on YouTube, and it's still being used in the news. So that's extremely, extremely discrediting to those media outlets.
It's incredibly discrediting to the likes of CNN and even The Guardian, who had carried his reports. I mean, this clown is boasting of being a complete fake, of getting involved in mercenary operations with military contracting buddies, and overtly supporting the US geopolitical agenda. And, you know, he's not even clever enough to hide what he's doing, but he still gets away with it, and he's held up as and described as a freelance journalist. I mean, it just makes you want it. It just makes you sick, doesn't it?
It really does. I mean, how can you be a journalist and a mercenary at the same time? It's unheard of.
That's it. And totally incompatible. You cannot be a journalist and a combatant at the same time. Those are two separate career paths, I'm afraid. And, you know, if you go down one career path, you are taking sides in a conflict. You are no longer an objective viewer of that conflict.
Yeah, so, it's very interesting, because what he the contrast of says publicly to what he says, you know, secretly, is quite huge. Because secretly he says this revolution is fake. You know, maybe these people, maybe Assad is the only person that can deal with these rebels because they're so horrible. So it's very, and he himself also talks about kidnapping a man to conceal a sex tape with the girl Noor Kels in his film, and hiring the FSA to do it. So he's basically accusing them of being criminals, but being just as much a criminal, if not more so, himself. So, and the attitude of this person to think that, you know, he can save these savages by bringing democracy to them is such a condescending mentality to have, that it's nice for someone like that to be made an example of.
Sure, yeah, and it's democracy Hollywood style. It's just democracy done with fakery and paying people off to say what you want to say. what you want to have them say, and then you get all your big buddies in the media to project an image to the masses of people who just suck it up. We're going to break. We'll be back for one more segment with Mimi from Syria. Don't go away. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. My guest today is Mimi El-Laham, who joins us to talk about the Syrian situation. Did I say your name a bit better this time, Mimi?
Yes, perfect.
Thanks so much. Okay, before we move on to talk about your latest video, let's just finish up on the Matthew Van Dyke story. You had a couple more points you wanted to make.
Well, I just wanted to also point out that while the US and the French and Italians were using mercenaries in Libya, they were at the same time accusing Gaddafi of using African mercenaries in Libya. And of course, this resulted in the ethnic cleansing of sub-Saharan Africans out of Libya by the, you know, the democratic, freedom-loving rebels. And I'd also like to just say one last thing about my channel, just to plug my channel a bit.
Absolutely.
That a year prior to Matthew Van Dyke's being exposed as a mercenary through his leaked email documents, I had already exposed him as a mercenary. It just took a while for my conviction to be vindicated.
So you actually knew he was a mercenary. That was after he'd already gone to Syria, right? But you knew he'd been a mercenary in Libya previous to that.
Yes, and I said it in one of the videos on my channel.
Right, because it wasn't widely known that he was, or was it? I mean, was it? Did he advertise the fact that he'd actually been fighting in Libya? No, he didn't. Right.
Absolutely not. And he does. He advertised the fact that he was fighting in Libya, but there's nothing public information that he was a mercenary in Libya.
I see, yes. And we were supposed to believe that... Are we supposed to believe that he was a jihadist? I mean, why would he be over there fighting?
Apparently for freedom and the American way.
Really?
Yes.
It's hard to not laugh at that, isn't it? Okay. Well, look, maybe let's, in the time we've got left, let's talk a little bit about your latest video in which you're talking about some recent allegations which have surfaced, claiming links between President Assad and al-Qaeda.
These allegations have been floating around recently now that the FSA's former friends, which are ISIS, which actually helped them take over Syrian military air force bases in Aleppo, and had been helping them in military operations in Latakia and Aleppo, suddenly they began an argument between them and the FSA about how Syria should be run, etc., and there's clashes between them. So now that there's clashes between them and they're no longer friends, suddenly the FSA has decided that they are secretly allied with Assad. And the interesting thing about this is that the Western media has puppeted this conspiracy theory without any evidence for that matter. But whenever anyone who can see the truth clearly and can see evidence of conspiracy, such as in 9/11, that is something that cannot be spoken about. It's taboo.
Indeed.
So it's quite an interesting contrast with this conspiracy theory. And in my video, I just went into the evidence of how much allied with ISIS the insurgency was, and how the insurgency is still allied with a faction of al-Qaeda called Jabhat al-Nusra. So the propaganda about
the insurgency is now fighting against Al-Qaeda is totally false because they're still allied with one faction of Al-Qaeda. And I just basically broke down the propaganda behind such allegations.
Yeah, and it's a very complex, sort of confusing topic because really when we talk about Al-Qaeda, we're talking about, to me, a largely fictitious construct. Of course, there are real people and there are real terrorists out there and they do commit atrocities. But the concept of this organization of Al-Qaeda, I mean, what's your take on that, on Mimi? I mean, you can run with that, yeah.
I just wanted to say I absolutely 100% agree with you. It is largely a construct.
Yeah.
And was there a second part of your question that I interrupted you with?
It seems to be that Al-Qaeda was a useful construct for the post-Cold War geopolitics of controlling the world, when it was necessary to have something that the US was fighting against all over the world, a secret organization that was hell-bent on destroying the American way of life and that hated our freedoms, was an excellent enemy to have created. And of course, they had the material for that with the jihadists that they against the Russians during the Russian invasion of Afghanistan. And so they created this this sort of fantasy construct, which some would say, you know, evolved and took on life like a Frankenstein's monster. Some people believe that Al-Qaeda really was responsible for the 9/11 attacks. You know, what those who've done any deep study tend to come to the conclusion there were hijackers involved who identified with some sort of jihadist principles, but those who were pulling the strings behind 9/11 and those who controlled it were the same intelligence organizations, the same ones that we see today that always seem to have their hand in it. And what's interesting, Mimi, is that these intelligence organizations, that they've always got what they call informants. And what is an informant? Well, an informant is someone who doesn't directly work for you. They actually are, you know, in police terms, informants are usually considered to be criminal types who you then get to do things for you in return for certain favors. And so these informants become blurred. There is a huge blurring of the distinction between an informant and an actual terrorist, because in reality they're the same type of people. And so when a terrorist attack occurs, well, who is actually responsible for it? When so many of these informants are being handled and managed by their handlers. What's your view on all that?
No, just speaking to that, I want to remind you of Anwar al-Awlaki, who was on the CIA's drone list.
Yes.
His son was killed by a drone, even though he was a US citizen. This man actually dined at the Pentagon, you know.
Indeed.
Not long. So, obviously, there's been many Al-Qaeda suspects that have been captured that have turned out to be either officers of MI6 or agents of MI6 or Shin Bet or the CIA. Osama bin Laden started off as a CIA agent. There's an intrinsic tie here, and there's also a sort of, you know, sometimes I actually heard from a fireman that many of the arsonists are firemen themselves.
Yes.
So this is, you know, this is the reality. So
Yeah.
To become more clear about what is Al-Qaeda, I don't believe it's a real organization in the sense that we are led to believe. I don't think it has such a great hierarchical system that's really organized. I don't believe they have huge subterranean bases, as we were told in 2001. I don't believe that they have the capability of launching a plane or whatever it was at the Pentagon. I don't think any such organization has the capability of doing that today without, you know, being part of a huge military and resulting in absolute total war. So to say what is Al-Qaeda, I think that it has been developed as an ideology, and the heads of this organization, which, you know, put out videos every now and then of what the next target should be or what is halal, these heads are more than likely controlled. And in this case, at the moment, it's Zawahiri. And interestingly, right, one of Osama bin Laden's old bodyguards went publicly on television to say, well, and this was in Arabic, and he lives in Egypt right now. He was in prison for a very long time. And he said that he believes that Zawahiri is a CIA agent. This is Osama bin Laden's former bodyguard telling us this. So what's interesting now is I would also want to mention that this organization, ISIS, the Islamic State in Iraq and Sham, has just recently been excommunicated by Zawahiri. Says, you guys are no longer Al-Qaeda. You're not obeying the rules. The rules are you're supposed to make friends in Syria with other rebels and, you know, concentrate your war against the government. That's it. You are no longer Al-Qaeda. And interestingly, ISIS didn't suffer any less for being no longer part of Al-Qaeda. They're just as strong as they were previously. And that goes to show you that the head of Al-Qaeda had no real tentative control over any of these militias on the ground anywhere. It's just a talking head in a faraway place that has no monetary or hierarchical ties. So Al-Qaeda as an organization just seems to be more of an ideology than anything.
Absolutely. We're just at the end of the hour, Mimi. Very quick 10-second wrap-up. What do you think is going to happen this year? What's your prediction?
I'm going to be optimistic and say that more than likely the insurgency is going to collapse, and there's going to be some kind of a compromise reached between the world powers.
Well, that sounds like a better outcome than a lot of the ones I had been considering. We're going to have to leave it there. Thank you. It's been terrific. And I really want to get you on a more regular basis if we can. I thank you so much for talking to us today, Mimi.
My pleasure. It was very enjoyable.
Thanks. Truth News Radio Australia signing out. We'll be back next week.